So our four speakers that are with us this weekend, we asked them if they would also participate in this panel discussion tonight. So it's a little different format than what we've done in the past, but they all know this. This is not brand new to them. The plan tonight is we have basically four topics picked out. And I'll give you those topics here in a few minutes. But we've got basically four topics picked out. And I'll just give those to you now, actually. Here are the topics that we have for our panel. Husbands and wives, disciplining children, homeschooling and public schooling, dating and singleness. So those are the four topics, and all related to the theme of our meeting, which is strengthening families. And we asked these speakers to prepare to answer some questions about those topics. And sort of here's the thought process. I think most of us understand the scriptures related to each of those. We could look at any four of those topics, and we understand the scriptures and what the Bible says. Tonight, our goal is to give them an opportunity to tell us how they take what the Bible says on those topics and put it in practice, what those things look like in their own home. So for you all, I talked to some of you about this. I'll ask some questions, and don't feel like you each have to comment on every question that we ask. So if you've got something that you really feel like is valuable to say, then definitely do that. But if you want to pass on a question, that's perfectly fine too. But don't all pass. I know. In fact, I'm just going to give you the mic, and you can pass it down.
Okay.
And so we'll go topic at a time. And what I'm imagining we'll do is, I've got some questions that they know that I'll be asking them. And then at the end of each topic, if we have some questions from the audience, you all have an opportunity to ask some questions to follow up. And it won't be a lot of time, but probably two or three questions from the audience. Okay, are you guys ready? Let's just dive in. Okay, so the first topic that congregation want to hear your thoughts on is husbands and wives. So, kind of like I said earlier, I think most people have read their Bibles and they know what the Bible teaches about the relationship between husbands and wives, that husbands are leaders, wives fill a supporting role. So the question is, how do you make that work in your home? What does that relationship look like in your home?
I guess I have the microphone. Young and just not experienced enough to get rid of it too quick. But my name's Asa Phillips, for those of you that don't know me. I am married for a few short years now, only just 3 years, I guess, or four. I'm already losing track, but four? Okay. She's not here. That's her cousin that's telling me that, so if that tells you anything. But I'll try not to be too nervous up here. I'm not too experienced with public speaking, but in our house, I feel like when I read that question, the first thing that came to my mind was that you're immediately drawn to think that the husband is the superior and the wife is submissive to him and he's the one in power and what he says goes and the wife is just there to do whatever he says. But I really liked what Kevin had to say tonight about how you complement each other and you're not coming at this from a place of power and how you're able to show each other that respect and accomplish these things that you want to accomplish, but ultimately the husband is the head of the household. And in our situation, say, Casey's always been very close to her family, and it was a hard decision for us to come to when we were going through these things, even before we got married, of where we were going to potentially live, because I work on a family farm, and I have to be within very close driving distance to that, but at the same time, we wanted to be somewhere close to her family. And I guess, ultimately, that was a situation where she yielded, and I had to take... I was the one who made the decision on that, I guess. Just, I don't know how to word that exactly, but she was the one who gave up her position on that, and I stayed where I was. And that's just the only example I could really come up with that shows necessarily how the husband would be in the head of the household. But when it comes to our daily lives and the things that we teach our kids and the way that we raise our children and the goals that we have for them, which my oldest child is only two, so my experience is pretty limited. So, but when we do those things, that's something that we come together on, and we are so fortunate and so blessed that our values align so closely with each other on those things. So there's not necessarily that back and forth or bickering and me saying, oh, well, the Bible says I'm in charge. I mean, there's none of that. It's just we both value each other's opinions, but I guess that's the best answer I can give right now. So
very good. Thanks. Who else?
One and done.
We're reluctantly taking the mic. Kim and I have been married almost 33 years. I'm very blessed to have a wife that we are, I think we're on the same page on about every issue we come across. I have the final say, but it would be so foolish of me not to take her input. Having the final say is not always the most popular position to have. But we're a team. You work as a team. The buck has to stop someplace, and that's the position that God has given me.
I'm old enough I have to write things down. Well, experience, my brother, experience. A couple of things I thought of when I thought about this question. The first thing I thought of was how much of a tremendous support Jill is for me in my work. I don't know if I could do this work without her. I'm confident I would not be in this work without her. She was kind of the last boot that kicked me over the cliff. And I needed that. I needed that big time. But just things like, just simple things like helping me focus on something that I've got coming up and make sure that I'm on task and on track with that, to planning things. You know, we have a master calendar. It's a joke. I've got a calendar on my phone, and I've got a calendar in my office, and I've got a calendar in my head, which is never right. And then we've got the master calendar, and I don't know, it's been several years ago, but I told her I had something coming up the next day. I'm doing this tomorrow. She goes, "No, you're not." And I said, "Yeah, I am." And we went over to the calendar, and it wasn't on there. She said, "See, you're not." So I grabbed a pen and I wrote it in. And she goes, "Oh, don't forget, you've got this tomorrow." So it's stuff like that, to ideas. I can't even begin to count how many times I bounce ideas off of her. Especially for things like the youth rally or a VBS or something like that. She's so much more in tune to kids and what they need and what will help them. I ask her, "Here's my idea. Can that work for 10 and under?" And she'll say yes. Or sometimes she says, "No, that won't work. We got to do something different." And so we change it. We fix it up. And critiquing. But I've had more than enough times that without being rude, she's very calm and quiet and helpful to me, but I know from her comments that wasn't my best job, or that could have gone a lot better. And I need that. I need that honest work. The last thing I'll say, I don't know where I heard this a week or two ago after I'd gotten these ideas, but I heard this from somewhere, and I wrote it down because that's how I remember things. It said that I heard this: woman was not created to be the same as man. She was created to make up for man's shortcomings. And that's exactly true. You know, she has strengths where I have weaknesses. I have strengths where she has weaknesses. And between the two of us, we try to find some way to make up a complete person.
I'd just say I agree with everything that's already been said, so I'll try not to be too long-winded here. But I think communication is key in this type of relationship. For us, I'm like Jay. I have the final say. But I also... we talk through almost every situation pretty thoroughly, especially if it's something that's a serious decision to be made. And while I have the final say, I have all her input to make that decision. And a lot of times it's maybe not the decision I would have made without her input, or I might be making it for a different reason, you know. But I think if the focus is always, in the case that Asa, you mentioned, you had to make a choice between one or the other, I think you made your choice based on the good of your family. You weren't doing that because this is what I want. You're doing this because this is what I think is best for our family. And when your wife sees that you're doing that, she's able to support you in that way. So that's good. Yeah.
Very good. Okay, no, you keep the mic.
All right.
So next question is very much...
Do you want to say it?
But can you hear me? Is everybody catching this on the mic? Okay, good. A little closer? Okay, well, here we go. So related to that question, you know, when obviously two people get married, they're going from a life of autonomy to now a new life where they're having to work together with someone else. So the question is, related to that relationship that you just talked about, did that take time to sort out the balance? Before you get married, you're your own boss.
Right.
And you get married, and now you got to work together. So the question is, did it take time to work out the balance? And especially what we're thinking of here is, you know, maybe advice to young couples that maybe haven't worked out that balance yet.
Yeah. For Grace and I, we both came from families that were in the church already. You know, we were raised in the church, both of us, and we both had good examples of the things that we've been talking about tonight in practice. We were raised with the God's idea of a family in mind, so there really wasn't a whole lot of adjustment for us, because we both kind of understood what our roles would be, and we had seen those roles played out in our parents, so we kind of knew what we were getting into. But as far as going from an autonomous, a single person, to a married person, there is considerations you have to make, and you have to figure out how this other person, what their preferences are, and how they like to do things, and you want to try to accommodate that as much as possible. There was one compromise we couldn't make, which was we had ended up having to not share the same tube of toothpaste. Because I used the, I think John Lee described it one time as the gorilla grip. And she likes to do things a little more neatly. So we have our separate toothpaste. There's certain ways you want to fold towels and hand towels, and certain ways to load the dishwasher or not touch the dishwasher until it needs to be unloaded. I mean, I say these things in jest a little bit, but there is a real concept behind it of she manages the home, and I want to do what I can to make her, to show her that I value that. You know, I don't care how to hang the dish towels, but she does. And by me doing it the way that she prefers, it shows her that I feel that her managing is important, and I value that. And so I'm going to do those things in that way to encourage her. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does to me anyway.
He must be a gorilla guy too. I don't know. Yeah, the short answer, I didn't have to write this one down because the answer to that question is yes. It takes time. It's not natural for two human beings, I don't care how much they like each other or love each other, it's not natural for them to start living under the same roof. That's why they call it a honeymoon period. Eventually, there's going to be things that are going to irritate the other person about you and that are going to irritate you about the other person. That's just natural. And some of that, I appreciated what you said about she's running the home. That's the way it is at our house. Jill's organizing and running the home, and I'm trying to help her where I can. And there's a phrase, you were asking about advice. There's a phrase that I've had to learn, and I still mess it up all the time, and I'm always saying I'm sorry for it. But used to, when she had a certain way that she wanted something done, she'd say, I'd say, how do you want it done? And she'd say, well, what do you think? And I'd say, I don't care. Well, that was the wrong thing to say, guys. I don't have a preference is much better. Because I did care. I didn't have a care. I really didn't care how it was done my way. But I did care that it was done how she was happy with it. And so I don't have a preference. I try very hard to say it that way. I don't always. Jill will attest to this. I don't say phrases the way I should. Sometimes it comes out wrong. But there are compromises that have to be made on both sides. And just for clarification, Jill and I don't use the same tube of toothpaste either. But it's because she prefers mint, and I don't like mint. So I don't like her toothpaste. It's not how she squeezes it.
I'll get this out of the way. Casey and I definitely share the same tube of toothpaste. And maybe that's because we're so young in our marriage. But yeah, that's certainly not an issue at this point. But she does have specific ways that she likes to do things. And that was something that I started out thinking, oh, I don't care. But just as he said, How did she say it? She said, I don't want you to do something because you think I want you to do it. I want you to do it because you want to do it. I don't remember if that's exactly how she said it, but And then eventually that came where I did want to do things for her because I knew that those were things that made her happy. And as it turns out, she's a pretty efficient person, and I found out that most of the way she does things is for a good reason, and it's because they work better. So maybe throwing things on the floor and worrying about picking them up later is not so good. But I would agree with everyone that it does take time, and it's still going to take a lot more time than it has from now. Every time that we find ourselves in a disagreement, or I hate to call it an argument, but I mean, you find yourself in a disagreement like that, I feel like we come to an agreement much faster than we have in the past. Every time we get to this point where originally your emotions are going to flare up and you're going to be on the defensive and your ego is going to get in the way of everything. But you just have to stop and realize that maybe you are wrong. And if you are, it's not that bad to say it. It's easy to admit I'm wrong. Maybe we should just take a second here and calm down. And once you can begin to communicate with each other in a loving way instead of out of spite or anger or fear, you're going to learn to overcome these obstacles much easier. You're going to recover from them much quicker, and it's going to help you in your outside life. I've seen a lot of examples where I work with family, with my father particularly, and he and I have butted heads since the day I was born, I'm assuming. And I've really noticed some times lately where I've been able to put my ego and my anger or my reactions aside just enough for us to diffuse the situation and get through things better. And I know that that's directly as a result of consciously working on our marriage and trying to put our best foot forward each time and trying to put someone else's interest ahead of yours. And I think that's where it really comes down to is putting them first, putting someone else before yourself.
I just want to say that I just relaxed realizing that your mother-in-law's here. No. Mine isn't. Anytime two people come together, there's adjustments to be made. The toothpaste thing. Seriously, that is a small example of resolving a conflict quickly. You know, any conflict, that the quicker you can resolve it, the better off you are. In today's world, it takes a long time to figure out this balance. Because in today's world, women are pushed to be more independent, and marriage is promoted as something disposable. So forget the balance. Goodbye. I'll try it with someone else. So yeah, there's two people come together, there's adjustments to be made. But those adjustments, as tough as they are so rewarding as you work through them.
Very good.
You're hanging on to it.
You ready for the next one?
Advice.
Okay, so some of you have already done this a little bit. The last question we have on relationship between husbands and wives, you know, think about especially looking back to maybe the first year or two or three, or, you know, Jay, you've been married 33 years, you said, so maybe think about the first decade of marriage even. What do you know now you really wish you could have understood then? And what we're looking for here is specific pieces of advice for people who are still in those first few years of marriage.
Resolve conflict quickly. Now, be on the same team. Be on the same team. I went and visited a man in the middle of a divorce and trying to encourage him to make things work. The elders went to visit with the same man. Him and his wife got together and were complaining about the visits they were having. They eventually got a divorce, unfortunately. But it just kind of blew my mind that you're getting a divorce and you're on the same team complaining about something. Resolve this. But to be on the same team, two is better than one. And don't sweat the small stuff. I know Dwayne has shared about, that's a one. I remember most of our arguments, I'm afraid, and take credit for a large percentage of them. But just a stupid argument. We were in the middle of building a house. We were blessed to build a house. Two years into our marriage. The color of carpet. It was ridiculous how hard-headed I was. That is such a, that's not even a one, Dwayne. You know? There's been some health issues in our family. Once you have something dramatic happen to where you're not guaranteed tomorrow, you start valuing time. Resolve the conflicts quickly and move on.
I don't know how equipped I am to answer this since we've only been married a few years. I would agree with that, though. That was one of the best things that we learned when Casey had said it early on, don't let the sun set on your anger. And that's really played a good part. If it has forced me at some times when otherwise I would have just pouted and walked away and, you know, went into a different room and just walked out of the bedroom and said, I'm going to lay on the couch tonight, you know. But then you sit out there and you start thinking about it and you hold yourself accountable for your actions and you decide that it's time to go back in and do the hard thing and start trying to talk it through and admit maybe you made the mistakes too. So, yeah, that was a good one. I had another one. I really did, but I forgot it when he was saying something. So I didn't write all my answers down. So inexperienced there too, huh? If I get it, I'll come back to it.
Yeah, you.
I'll be happy to give you my time.
Well, I thought and thought about this, and I know part of the instructions were, we know the scriptures tell us your experience, but I can't help it.
It's okay.
Okay. My advice to a newly married or an older married, it doesn't really matter, I don't think, but 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 8 through 10. And above all things, have fervent love for one another, for love will cover a multitude of sins. Be hospitable to one another without grumbling. As each one has received a gift, minister it to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. I'll just let Peter say it.
Amen. I got a text from my wife. He told me to hold the mic up to my mouth a little bit. So. Appreciate that, honey. Thanks. Is this better? All right. There's a live example for you. Even
perfect.
Better, right?
Yeah.
That, yeah, yeah.
Did you plan that? Is that in your notes?
No.
Oh, good.
This is my help. See how good she is?
That's great.
All right.
I got to see if I got a text for my wife.
Move things along. No. Well, I wanted to explain why I pulled my phone out in case somebody saw me doing that, because that's kind of rude. Yeah, right. Advice, yeah. Number one in my list is that there's no room for pride in marriage. You can be married or you can be prideful. You can't be both, in my opinion. There's just no room for it. And the sooner you can figure that out, the easier your marriage is going to be. Because as we have these disagreements and arguments, those happen. Those are going to happen. You're living with another person. Unless you've married someone completely identical to you, but that's not possible, we all know. So arguments and disagreements are going to happen, but you have to be able to swallow your pride. And in most respects, or most situations, it doesn't... There's not one person who's right and one person who's wrong. You know, there's going to be some right and going to be some wrong on both sides in almost every situation. So you can't ever really feel like you're vindicated. Oh, I'm right, so I'm going to stick with my guns here. Well, maybe you're right, but then you're going to be alone too. So congratulations, you're right, but you're also alone. So that's not what I want. And so I have to think about, in my mind, okay, what did I do to cause this problem? And what can I do to say, okay, these are the things that I should have done differently. I should have talked to you differently than what I did. I'm sorry that I said these things in this way. I shouldn't have done that, and this is what I really meant. You know, I think the swallow your pride, start talking through your conflicts is the best way to resolve them quickly. Because the thing that takes a long time is when we do try to justify ourselves, I guess. If there's not a better word than that, I don't know. But that's my number one thing on my list here.
Thanks.
I had to write it down this time. One of the big lessons I learned early on, and this doesn't just apply to marriage, but it absolutely does apply to marriage, but not exclusively, is that so much of the time when someone is upset and they're being angry towards you, it's not always because they're mad at you. A lot of times they're upset about something else and they're lashing out. And a lot of times we're upset and we lash out at the ones that we care the most about when we're upset about something else. So keep that in mind. It's not always something you did, and don't take it personal, and help, you know, talk the situation out. That's where communication can come in. So good. That was something I picked up pretty early on. So
thank you.
Hey, comment.
Please go ahead. You're close enough, Tom.
A lot of this starts before you're married. Know who you're marrying. Have a common goal that whatever we do, we want to do it pleasing to the Lord. And keep that in mind as you go through these little issues that you're coming up with. If both of you have that as your common goal, we want to do what pleases God. And the second one is, always be sweethearts. Stay sweethearts all your life.
Thank you, Tom. Are there any questions from the audience? We've gone through everything I told them we'd ask them, so this is your chance to give them a curveball. You got something, Maverick?
It's part of a question. So kind of what I'm understanding, you guys kind of saying, is for a good marriage, it's more of a partnership than a submission ship. It's more of a partnership, although at the end of the day, for the decisions and the character of the marriage, the responsibility relies on the husband. But we also have to respect, honor, and help our wives realize how special they are to us and how much we appreciate them in that. Is that kind of what you're saying?
A dictatorship is when one side submits to the other side in every single situation. That's not what God wants. A partnership is when both sides take turns submitting to the other one and working together to find a common solution.
What other questions are there?
Are you going into dating a little bit?
Yeah, we're going to get there. That is...
I'm dating, sorry.
Yeah, that's topic number four. We'll get there. Is this a good time to ask it, though, or we'll just wait?
No, go ahead.
Okay, okay. All right, we'll go to the next topic then. So this is about children and disciplining children. So the Bible says discipline your children. So we're not necessarily asking for specific mechanisms of discipline, but maybe on some level. Talk to us about your philosophy and in general as a parent, how you have handled discipline in your home.
Well, kind of just as a transition between what we just discussed and this, I think it's important that you and your spouse talk about how you're going to discipline your children as well. And Tom, you wisely brought up, do it beforehand, not in the heat of the moment, right? Talk about these things beforehand so that you kind of have a plan when it inevitably will come up. But just in general, I think it's important if you tell your child, if you do this, then this is going to happen. Then make sure that when they do that, the consequence actually happens. You know, it is, I think, damaging to our children when we tell them there's going to be a consequence and then for whatever reason there's not that consequence. I think it's important for us to follow through and to teach them and be consistent with our discipline, whatever mode of discipline that we choose to use. I might take this back, but I need to look at my notes and see if there's anything else.
Well, I'll just kind of continue because that was one of the things I had, consistency. But at the same time, having had five children that are, well, there's some similarities, but all five of them are very different. There's consistency, but at the same time, you have to understand that every child is a little bit different. You can't, consistency can't mean that every child is treated exactly the same way. I won't name names, but we had one child where we could look at them and say no very sternly, and that was the end of it. Then we had another child that Jill called me. I was teaching at the time. Jill called me at school. And she said, Doug, I don't know what to do next. I've told him no. I've smacked his hand. Oh, his. I didn't mean to do that. I smacked their hand. It's not Elijah. I don't want to throw him under the bus. Yes, you are. I've smacked his hand so many times, I think I'm going to hurt him. This isn't working. Well, we figured out with that child, putting them on a chair in the corner and watching them watch everybody else play was absolutely torture. That was almost above and beyond cruel for that child. So that's what they got. And I have to give a shout out to Jill. She is one of the most creative when it comes to disciplining and figuring out what to do. I can remember we had the house we were living in. We had two children that were arguing and just would not stop fighting. And our kitchen dining room area was a big open area, and it had tiles that were 1 foot each. She put one in one tile, one in the other tile, and said, you have to stay there until you can get along. They started out back to back, and they ended up face to face. Had another instance where we had a child throw something at another child that could have severely damaged that child. And her answer to that was she went and got a jump rope, tied one end around one kid's waist, tied the other end around the other kid's waist, and said, I'll untie it when you can get along. And the one that threw it in the first place was kind of a smart aleck and said, what if I have to go to the bathroom? And Jill's answer to that was, well, you can either hold it or get over your shyness. I don't care. And pretty soon they were laughing and getting along and everything was fine. I didn't ever come up with that. But you have to remember that each child is different. Consistency is important. But if whatever your one child, you're going to do the exact same thing for the same offense with the other child, good luck with that. Good luck with that. Because what works on one isn't going to work on the other. And last suggestion, lowest level possible. Start at the lowest level possible. You don't want to pull out your nuclear answer for some small offense, and then when some bigger offense happens, now what do you do? So fix it with the smallest form of discipline that you can have so that there's room to move up if that doesn't work.
My child doesn't mind. I have a 2-year-old and a 2-month-old. So my experience in this as well is fairly limited. But
whoever came up with the terrible twos never had a teenager.
Yeah? I'm expecting to find that out, if she takes after me at all. But that's where what Tom said comes in to play again. And as Kevin said too, we had that discussion before we had kids. This is what is going to look like, hopefully. This is what we want to do. This is the direction we want to go. Those are conversations that were had many times long before we ever got pregnant. And we would see how other people did things and see what worked with them and what didn't. And that doesn't mean that just because, like Doug said, if it works for someone else, that doesn't mean it's going to work for this kid. But those are things that we took into account, and we started having these discussions beforehand. And so far, improvements have been made, and it doesn't feel like it at times, but the things that come to mind are consistency, but consistency between Casey and I and myself, that we both are on the same page. We both, if one of us is disciplining and saying, no, don't do that, the other one needs to say that too. Otherwise, the child is going to be able to play each other, off one another. But consistency and patience, just a mountain of patience. And understand that you're not going to have the model child every day or the first day or the first month or when you start out or maybe ever. But you just have to be patient and do the best you can, and just patient, love, consistency. So that's the best I got.
I think that covers it.
Okay.
I don't have anything to add to that other than philosophy on discipline. Prepare your child to be self-disciplined. That's what we're out to do, is to prepare them for us to step out and God to step in. The rest of my philosophy, be here tomorrow.
Just to add what you just said, Jay.
Lost.
Say it again. Say it again.
Say it again.
Yeah.
No.
About the being self-disciplined.
Oh, yeah. In order for them to be self-disciplined, I think it's important that you display self-discipline yourself also, so they can see that example. So being an example of a disciplined person is, I think, just as important as actually disciplining them, too. Don't be too distracted to discipline your children. Don't feel like, sometimes I feel like I'm working on projects around the house. I don't want to stop. I want to keep working on what I'm working on. I'm in the middle of something. Well, I need to stop, because if they see me kind of placing them behind or at second place at that time, then what is it teaching them about the importance of discipline, you know? So I think that's important to keep in mind. Okay.
Those were really good comments. I guess one more thing on discipline, if you have anything else to say on it, is, you know, especially for, you know, you all that have children that are getting older, and same question that I asked for marriage. Is there anything that you understand now about discipline that you wish you would have understood when you were in your first few years of having children?
I think I'm the oldest one up here, so I've had most of the experience. I'm a short guy, but it's a confession. I've had some anger problems. As I get older, I'm a lot more mellow. I wish I would have been more patient. Anger really played a role too much in my disciplining children. I'll probably talk about that a little bit more tomorrow, too. But don't lose focus on what you're doing. You're raising a child, preparing them to be self-disciplined. And it's for their good, not for any retaliation.
I don't know if I have a very good answer for this yet. I'll pass for now. If I think of something, I'll come back.
I'm stealing this from a comedian that I heard a long time ago, but read the book of Genesis and read the book of Exodus. God is the perfect parent. But if he had trouble, what makes you think you're going to get through this thing unscathed? One thing I try to remember is, and my mom's here, and so she'll dispute this with me because she knows better, but I was not the perfect child. And since I was not the perfect child, my children are not going to be perfect children, which means I've got to be ready for when they're not perfect children. And if God had trouble, he's a lot smarter than I am. He's had 2,000 years of dealing with me, and I've only had 50 years of dealing with me. And I don't understand me sometimes. So you're going to have problems with your kids. There's going to be discipline issues. Prepare yourself ahead of time. Know, have a plan in place, but also be ready. Be ready to float on that plan and fly by the seat of your pants, because you're going to need patience, you're going to need love, and you're going to need an understanding of who you are so that you can be patient and love them.
When I was first having kids, I was more focused on discipline, which I'd always heard that it's good to start early and not try to start when they're teenagers, for example. It makes... If you can teach children discipline at a younger age, then with the not so serious problems, then they're going to be better equipped to deal with self-discipline a lot of times, like Jay said, with the more serious issues of young adulthood and these type of things. So you'd rather not be teaching discipline at that point when there's real consequences involved that are lasting. I don't remember where I was going with that, really, but that was one thing I didn't really think about when I was first married, but also, or first having kids. One of the quotes that Grace found and shared with me that I want to share on this, the days can be long, but the years are short. So don't forget that either. I didn't realize how short they were. And my son's almost 13 now. All of a sudden, I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you. Does anybody out here have questions for them about discipline? Yeah. Okay, so we will go to the next one. Next topic is about homeschooling and public schooling. And I think we have some diversity up here, right? Jay, your kids were homeschooled. Doug and Kevin, I guess I don't know for sure.
We're public.
Both public. Perfect. Perfect. Okay. So, I guess I didn't mean to.
That's okay. This.
Okay, so the question, first question on this is just how did your family decide? I'm sure there were conversations that went into that. And so how did your family decide on we're going to do public schooling or we're going to do homeschooling?
Again, for us, Grace and I both were raised, and we both went to public school. And we were both from small towns in the Midwest, and we had pretty good experiences with that. And so our children are also in public school, based kind of on our experiences, but also on a large part about where we're at. And, you know, yes, they're in public school, but we also wanted to make sure that it was the right school for us, you know what I mean? And we kind of chose where to live in part based on the fact that it was a good district, and we saw it as, you know, it's not the church, obviously, but it was a morally pretty good place to be for the most part. For me, I think it's if you go the public school route, I think it's important to be very involved with your children, know what they're doing, know what they're studying. I look at my kids' textbooks, for example, and I've had some really good discussions with my children in some of the areas, especially of science, to tell them, well, to point things out in the textbooks that aren't, I'm talking about evolution, to point things out that are really, I mean, anybody to me with, I shouldn't say it that way. Very easily refutable. Let's just say that, and just ridiculous statements. And my son can attest to it. It's like, yeah, that makes total sense. Why would they say it this way? This is dumb. So we get good conversation going that way with those things. But I think it's important to be cognizant of what's going on and make sure that you're very involved in it. For us, I think also public school has given them some opportunities that they wouldn't have had in our family. As far as band and Moses is in robotics and Emerald, I'm sorry, but they're doing extra things that we just don't with our family size and the age of their siblings, we don't have time to do that kind of stuff with the older ones. And I found myself with a little bit of guilt sometimes about my older children, thinking, you know, they aren't able to do some of the things that I did, because we just don't have time for that kind of thing. And we do, it's not that we don't do anything with them, but I'm kind of rambling, I guess. But I hope you understand what I'm saying. I feel like they get more of those unique opportunities in public school. And that's just, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with homeschooling or that public schooling is the best thing for every person. I think it's an individual decision. It's based on your situation and a number of factors. But for us, it seems to make sense at this time, and we continue to reevaluate. You know, if things change in the district, we're going to make changes too. So.
Good.
You ended right where I was going to start. We talked about it, and our decision was pretty much based on our situation. We lived at the time when our kids were really hitting school age. We were living in the town that I grew up in. Small school, 50 to 60 kids per class, knew all the teachers on the first name basis. A couple of the teachers I'd had when I was in school. And one teacher my dad had had when he was in school. He was pretty old at that time. And we knew the district. This is going away, but you know, they say the Pledge of Allegiance in the morning. The coaches pray with the kids before team events. The football team had, I don't know if they still do this because we don't live there anymore, but they would have a meal before a game day meal the evening of the game, and there was always a prayer said. The science classes, I did a long-term sub for a science teacher that was out having twins, and she told me when I came in to see what I was going to be doing, she said, we're getting ready to go into the section on evolution. I have to bring it up. I have to teach it, but please emphasize that it's a theory and it's not proven. That's how I'm presenting it to the class, because I have to teach it for state standards, but I don't believe it, and I don't think anybody in the school believes it. So, now that's not to say the school district is perfect. There were issues when my kids were in high school with a couple of teachers that were pushing certain agendas that the parents did not like, and that those teachers were there for a year or two, and then they were gone. The school made sure they were not there anymore. So ours was based on our situation. When we did move to Flagstaff, and it was a much bigger school district, Arizona had charter schools very easily available and at no cost. It didn't cost us any more to put them in a charter school than it did public school. So we went that route because it was smaller and much more hands-on with the parents. You knew what was going on. We now live in Independence. Our oldest four are out of the house. They've graduated. They're on to other things. We've got one child left at home that's a junior, and we debated. He's got 2 years left of school. And you talk to Elijah, and he'll tell you he kind of, in a way, begged to be homeschooled. He really did want to be homeschooled those last 2 years. But since Jill and I had never done that, we weren't familiar with it, what I did not want to do, and I'm not putting this down, but what we did not want to do, because it was going to be the situation we probably were going to be in, I didn't want to put him in front of a computer screen and have him sit for 3 hours a day doing homework and doing classes on a computer screen, and that's all he did. I wanted him to have the interaction. So we chose to put him in public school for his last 2 years in a very large school. And I can't express how terrified, really, that made me for a while. My fears have been proven wrong, and not because of the school. There's all kinds of problems with the school, but with Elijah. He's handled it very well. He's adapted. Sorry if I'm embarrassing you, bud, but he's not perfect, but he's mature. He makes good decisions. We just had parent-teacher conferences last week, and we've always heard from teachers at parent-teacher conferences about our kids that they're good kids. I didn't even know how to respond, because there was teacher after teacher was just shedding praise on Elijah on how much he pays attention, how focused he is, how bright he is, how quick he picks things up, how willing he is to help other students, all this stuff. And I said something to Elijah in a hallway after being in a class. I said, this just keeps going from class to class. And he said, well, in that class, there's a couple of kids that scream at the teacher. There's a kid that the other day just jumped up on the desk and started dancing for no apparent reason. And the teacher doesn't know what to do about it. And I thought, wow, you know, he's sticking out. And he's making an impression. And cross-country season's over for him now, but he was influencing people on the cross-country team in good ways. And so I think it was a good decision. If our children had been young and we'd been in that same school district, we probably would have homeschooled. And so it was totally and completely based on our situation, and I think it's just a decision that mom and dad have to make and have to be willing to stick with, because I'll let you talk to this, but homeschooling your children, I think, is a wonderful thing. A lot of work. And I have a lot of admiration for the parents that do that. Anyway, I've talked way too
long. I can make a few comments. This is a topic that... Huh? Oh. Okay. This is a topic that Casey and I are currently having conversations about, because our daughter's two, and the next time we turn around, she's going to be ready for school. And we've discussed homeschooling, and we've discussed public school, and then you get down to which public school to go to and the benefits of each, and it just so happens that the two that are closest, I went to both of them, and both of them weren't the best, but... But there's sacrifices on both ends. I mean, when you could talk about the public schooling, you're going to sacrifice control or communication with your kids, in the sense that you're not with them all day. You don't control who they're around. You don't control the environment that they're in. They're stuck with those kids that are in their classrooms doing all these crazy things and acting like complete fools and jumping on tables and doing all and teaching them things that they... most certainly no kids of those age need to know. And that it just terrifies me. But then when you think about it, the homeschooling, it's going to sacrifice the parents' time that is the one doing the homeschooling. You're sacrificing the possible income they could have had. You're sacrificing the money it takes to do the homeschooling. On top of the time that you spend preparing and getting ready, and there's a lot of give and take with either way that you go. But I guess it comes back to what we were talking about earlier. The parents have to be on the same page. You have to have common goals, and you have to discuss ahead of time how to handle either situation and how to prepare your kids best for the future that they have ahead of them, and give them the best opportunity to get in a position where they're going to be able to do, like Jay said, and self-check, self-discipline, keep themselves in check. 'Cause I guess it starts a little bit earlier if they go to public school. You're not there to check them then, but eventually they're going to leave the home, hopefully. And and you won't be able to keep tabs on them forever, and they got to be able to take care of themselves. So the sooner you can start teaching them that, the better.
Well, this is a personal decision for each family, but Doug, I'll assure you my parent-teacher conferences are much more enjoyable than yours. But Kim was introduced to homeschooling, and when she brought it up to me, it's just a complete foreign idea. I immediately pictured my children with pocket protectors and a bunch of pens, and I was 100% opposed. I said, no, we're not going to do this. This is my final answer as the head of the house. Well, I didn't think I was making a fair decision, so I was going to make an informed, definite, 100% no. And I agreed to go to a homeschooling conference. This was in 1995. And the first thing I was impressed with was there were 1,100 families scheduled for this convention. And I thought, okay, we're not just the odd guy on the block. There's 1,100 families. If you know homeschooling families, we're not talking about one or two people. And there were a lot of people involved in this. Kim and I both attended public school. She did very well. I struggled. I struggled a lot. The ironic part was she's pushing homeschool, and I'm saying, let's do the public school thing. But quickly during that convention, we agreed to do this 1 year at a time. That's the quick conflict resolution. We'll do it 1 year at a time and see what happens. Well, four children later, we did it the whole time. That's all I got to say about that. You want to go to the next part of it?
Yeah. Since we're getting short on time, let me tell you all the questions I asked them, and then you all can kind of use your discretion to maybe provide some input on any particular question that you definitely want to say something on. Here are some of the other questions that I'd ask them about this. What advice would you offer to young families making this decision? What are the advantages to homeschooling? What are the advantages to public schooling? Do you think there are any misconceptions about homeschooling or public schooling? So all those together, maybe you guys take another turn.
I'll just quickly go through all of my notes. The advice, you have to be disciplined. I'm a strong supporter of parental choice in education, and one size does not fit all. Do your homework, because homeschooling does take a huge amount of time, and you're not going to save any money doing it that way. The advantage is you're spending time with your children. You're choosing your own curriculum. There's one-on-one attention. I have dyslexia. That is hereditary. And one-on-one attention for teaching someone with this struggle is quite the benefit. You have the advantage of when your child excels quickly, you move on. When they have issues that need attention, you can slow down and take care of that. A great benefit that I as a father really enjoyed, you can school your children in Lee Summit, in Estes Park, Colorado, in San Benito, Texas, in Yellowstone. You can pack your books up and school can be anywhere. And that was... I love that part of it. Do you think there's misconceptions about homeschooling? Yes. Homeschoolers are social misfits, held hostage in their home, and raised in a bubble. But homeschooling is very diverse and becoming more diverse. There are so many options. You find tutors. We've had our children that excelled in college classes pretty young. There are college professors that we have had tutor our children in their home. There's families that meet together. You have different parents with specialties will teach. One thing that's really picking up quickly, I believe, is these co-ops that you go to the school for 2 days a week. They give you the curriculum, what's expected, and then send you home, and the other 3 days you're home. So when someone needs to bring in more income, they have 2 days a week for a part-time. I'll leave it at that.
I think I'm going to do some homeschooling now. No. I really don't have much to add to the rest of that, just because we don't know what we're going to do yet. So
I'll just say that there's many misconceptions on both sides, and I think I would hope that for most part here, we're all smart enough to know those misconceptions and those stereotypes, and to know, I know very successful teenagers that are public school. I know very successful teenagers that are homeschool. I also know teenagers that are quite unsuccessful from both sides. So I think you just have to work. Either one's going to take work from the parents to be involved, pay attention, and to stay up with what's going on.
And not to toot my own horn, because I'm not taking credit for this, but as we had children in sports, in track, in gymnastics, we had children compete nationally. Our children play musical instruments. They've been to private schools. And, you know, I'm just pointing this out because there are so many options that are available out there. And I'm not down in home public school. I'm just telling you the options.
I'll throw this in. I had this written down. My children are stronger than I give them credit for, smarter than I could have hoped for, and more generous than I could have expected. So don't sell your kids short.
I just wrote something down too. It's more general than I think the question, but just this is what I have to share. Homeschooling is not going to keep your children in the church, and public schooling is not going to keep them out of the church. Your influence, your teaching, and your example are going to have a bigger impact. Show them what is important. Don't just say to them what is important.
Very good. Okay, I'm going to do what I did just a second ago, since we're just about out of time, and I'll ask kind of all the questions that I had in mind for the dating and marriage, and if you all have, you know, a comment or two that you want to make sure and say on that, we'll get those. So here are the questions I asked them about dating and marriage. How do you teach your children about this? How do you handle conversations with your kids when it comes to dating? How often do you talk about it? Have you ever had to handle conversations about being a single Christian? What are the advantages of being single versus being married? I know those are a huge range of topics, but I just wanted to make sure and throw that out there. So if there's anything you definitely wanted to say tonight, you can do that.
I'll try to be brief, but on the single versus married thing, you know, I gave the example of that we're not real spontaneous a lot of times, or try not to be, because it's hard on the family to do that. If you're single, you can do that. You can be flexible. And that's probably one of the main advantages, because if something comes up that you can help the church and do it, respond quickly, then you're in a good position to do that. As far as dating, as I said, my oldest is 12, so we haven't really talked about dating too much with them yet. But we have talked about with them about choosing good friends. You know, friends that believe in God, friends that understand or see kind of what's important, that there's things that are good to do and things that are not good to do. And we've taught our children some of those things, and try to find other children, other kids that share those beliefs. So it's, you know, the way you select your friends and the way you would maybe select someone to date, you can transfer those ideas over to the dating as well when the time comes for that, I think. And we've told them that if they don't learn good table manners, they won't have to worry about dating.
Well, I'm gonna be more brief than anybody would think I could. We tried to emphasize that as far as dating and marriage, that the purpose of one is to lead to the other. You don't date somebody if you're not considering marrying them. Now, I told you before, my kids are not perfect. A couple of my kids dated people that I knew they shouldn't marry, and they knew they shouldn't marry. But that's the purpose. Emphasize that. As far as how do you handle those conversations, openly and honestly, I tried to talk to them exactly how I would want them to talk to me, so that there could be communication there. And have you handled conversations about being a single Christian? Sure. I got four kids. Two are married, two are single, one's still in high school. So we've talked about that. And as far as the advantages, Paul said it best in 1 Corinthians 7. He covered it very well.
This is where notes would have came in handy for all the different aspects of that. But I guess I'm not too far removed from the dating side of things. And prior to Casey and I meeting, I had never even heard of the Church of Christ. So I am a very recent member, and it is possible for someone to join the church. And as I'll say tomorrow, Casey helped bring me to the Church of Christ, but the Church of Christ kept me here. And it is possible to meet someone outside of the church, but just don't focus so much on meeting someone. Focus on becoming the person that you need to be, so that when you do meet someone, you're far more, I don't want to say attractive, but your qualities are far more attractive to them. You want to be the best person that you can be, so that if you meet someone that has high standards, then you're going to meet them. Set the standards high for yourself. Yeah. And I was speaking somewhat from experience, because everyone said that Casey had really high standards. And I can assure everyone that if she and I would have met, you know, even a few years before we did, things would not have worked out, because I had a lot of work to do on myself, and I still am. And I hope that we all still are. But just don't be so concerned about being single. Be more concerned about being godly. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, Lisa, we're thrilled that you're at it with us. We're glad to have you with us. We tried to teach our children the qualities to look for in a mate. At a very young age, we would comically discuss the pool of possibilities. We as parents had our eyes out, but to help them make the decision. We taught them that marriage is a blessing from God. How do we handle these conversations? There's a fine line between frank and rude, but I spoke very frankly with my children, especially to my daughter, about dating and the behavior of dating. And they've done very well. I'm very pleased with who they've married. I've told my sons, though, you can buy a house that's a fixer-upper. You can do it yourself. You can fix it up and financially come up way ahead. But when you're looking for a wife, don't look for a fixer-upper. Don't compromise, because you're going to marry this person and they're going to help raise your children. Don't look for a fixer-upper. Know who you ought to be marrying and marry them. How often did I talk about it? As often as I thought I needed to remind them. And sometimes that was, what did we just talk about? And but, you know, that's Don't be afraid to be frank with your kids. You know, call a spade a spade. Tell them if you play with fire, you're going to get burnt. Don't hold back because you're talking about the rest of their life. You don't want phone calls. You don't want visits that you have to deal with. Do your homework and let them know. Look for a godly person that's going to help you be godly to marry.
Thanks. Clayton, you had a question.
I was going to talk about dating with a purpose. I think they
there you go. You got it. Very good. Are there any other questions before we finish? That was very good. You all had some excellent, excellent comments. Well, that's where we'll finish. I asked Clayton to do the closing prayer for us. Are there any announcements that we should make for tomorrow?
I'd announce the time.
Yeah, 9:30. That's a good announcement. 9:30 tomorrow. We'll have two speakers in the morning. We'll have lunch here at the building and then an afternoon service following the lunch. Of course, everybody's welcome. If you are here and you don't have a place to stay, Eric and Amanda are handling the housing. I think everyone has a place to stay, but if for some reason you don't, Eric and Amanda would be the ones to talk to. They can help arrange that.